Hey, Anna, I know it's been 50 years since the first men walked on the surface of the moon, and there's a new project out here from NASA. They are hoping to, in the future, in the very near future, to land the first woman on the moon.
It's about time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only been 50 years.
Yeah,
you know,
we'll get around to
let's get with it. So
let's send a bunch of dudes up first, though.
Yeah, well, you know, make sure it's safe, I guess.
Oh, my gosh.
It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. So this new mission is nicknamed Artemis. And so the Artemis mission is pretty bold. They're going to be, well, at least the plan is, they're going to launch a space station to circle the moon.
Uh-huh.
It'll just be circling around the moon. And then we send spacecrafts from the Earth to the space station. And then they shuttle the astronauts down to the surface of the moon and back up again. And they are definitely thinking it's going to be the first female landing on the moon.
Great.
And so this is one of those things. And, like, you know, people do ask us. They say, you know, well, like, why did it take so long for this to happen?
Yeah.
And there's really no answer. There's really no good answer.
Well, there's answers, but nobody wants to hear those answers.
Exactly. No
I
good
just got
answer.
Real.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Got real on the show.
But you know what I always think of is because people say, well, like, who's better in space? I'm like, nobody's better in space. You know who's the best person in space? The smallest person that they can launch up into space. Like, if you take up less...
Let's put kids in space.
I think,
terrible idea.
I think being an astronaut is a plus to be short.
Yeah.
Because you take up less space, you eat less food. It is... That is... So, you know, that's me. That's what I do, but...
That's an interesting approach. Mm-hmm. I would just say that... You know, women are just as qualified to be astronauts, just as smart and capable of walking, taking some steps. And
most definitely.
Getting them. So I think that that's also a good reason.
I think that's a great reason,
just saying.
This is going to be a cool, exciting mission. Yeah, so Artemis.
And Artemis is a great name because she's the goddess of the hunt and the moon, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Perfect.
So look for that coming in the 2020s.
I can't wait.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean is the astronomer and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers, and I'm like Steve Inskeep, asking the tough astronomical inquiries. In this episode, Mark Armstrong, engineer, entrepreneur, performer, and son of astronaut Neil Armstrong, joins us.
So big question for you is, would you be the first woman on the moon, if they asked?
The idea of, like, my phone ringing and, like, someone being like, look, Anna, we really need you to do this. Absolutely. Would love to do that, but if being like a tiny small person, I'm tall, like I'm like I got some girth, I'm like a, I mean I'm not like a little, I'm not gonna be able to fit in that spacecraft.
I don't know, astronauts come in all shapes and sizes. They like I think the tallest one was 6'4" or something like that.
Don't you think they want somebody big and sturdy like me in space, because it's like, well, something happens to her. I mean, she can withstand like winds. Like, I'm not going to go flying away like Sandra Bullock in Gravity or whatever.
Yeah, that doesn't work that way. But that's all right. But
I'm just saying.
I think you should keep the dream. I should keep your phone line open.
Yes.
We'll put it out there.
NASA, call me.
We'll put it out there because I think it'd be great to send you in space.
I think it would be hilarious. And I would have a lot of unvarnished reactions to things.
Yes.
They would have to be like, oh, she's really... Really into getting a little nervous about the. I would be very nervous about. I get motion sick.
They'd have to bleep out a lot of things.
I didn't want to say that. I was trying. There's kids listening. I would never cuss.
No.
But yes, they might. I would freak.
Space. Who knows what happens?
You never know. I mean, maybe you just lose all your filters. I don't have any way.
They could also turn your mic off too. That's the other thing
they
do.
Yeah. They'll be like, this one isn't for public consumption. They're not. She's not as cool as some of the other ones that go up. I think it's exciting though.
Yeah.
I would do it. Call me NASA.
Okay. All right. We'll put you on the list.
That's right. Put me on the list. Would you go as, in general, you're not a woman, but would you go like to the moon and like hang out for a while?
Yeah. I think I would go to the moon. The moon, you know, like if you could do it on a 2-week trip, I think that sounds like
You'll
my...
be like, look, here's what I'm willing to do for you, NASA.
Yeah. If it was like a months and months and years and permanent, that's too much.
Yeah.
But, I'd still do that. Whatever. If they call me, I'll do it.
Yeah. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Can I have your desk at work if you end up doing that? Because I love that. He's a roll top desk I really had my eye on.
Oh, okay.
You can't take the desk with you.
Oh, I'm going to be burying that desk. That desk is coming with
you're
me.
You're going to be like tucked in the roll top.
That's right. They're rolling down. And that'll just be with like, salute. Keep looking up. Keep looking up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can have the desk.
Okay. That's what I was really trying to get to.
Okay.
So I'm going to the moon and I get Dean's desk. Okay.
Perfect.
Done. All right. Well, gosh, Apollo 11, this is like, we've been talking a lot about it. It's so exciting.
Yes.
And I think what's really interesting is like, in culture, pop culture, what it means.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's been all over the place. I mean, how many documentaries have come out this year? And it really is the moment of the century, basically.
True.
I mean, so many people were tuning in to watching it live. And
it's like people remember where they were.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
There's this few history.
I know, there's not that many.
Some of them
of
are sad, but some of them, this exactly. is one of those kind of momentous ones.
And so they found this great footage with these really amazing cameras that they recorded, behind the scenes stuff with the astronauts, which I think have been really pretty cool. Like you get
that's
to
cool.
see them in training. You get to see them like putting on their suits right before they're walking out there. And
nerve-wracking.
I know. I mean, you got to think what's going through their minds.
Because it could have been scrubbed at any moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that the word we're scrubbed?
Yeah, that's right. That's good.
I know lingo.
That's good rocket lingo, yeah.
But I mean, can you imagine like psyching yourself up or like having to be like so focused and then being like, JK,
right.
we're not going now.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is amazing. Yeah, watching that historical footage.
The other thing is that I kind of was impressed by is that so many people like wanted to go there. Like they wanted to actually see the launch. It was like this kind of like nerdy Woodstock, where you go there and you like hang out, you camp out, and I picture them like, they're only like, I picture them being like 100 feet from the launch pad or something like that.
Yeah.
They're like, tailgating.
Behind a big fence.
But no, they're like 4 or 5 miles away. That's the closest. So imagine, like looking from one of the Cincinnati overlooks to downtown. Like that's how far away it was. But still, people.
But that's even cooler that they were like, it'll be fine. We still want to be near this exciting event.
Yeah, they wanted to be there for that. And that it was such a momentous occasion. And it's something that's hard for us to picture that, a rocket launch would be like this cultural phenomenon since we have so many of them that go off. But that was like, and I think what came about with this, why this is kind of picked up also is that astronomy is always like, it seems like it's a feel-good story. Like there's always this, there's the heroics, there's the going where nobody's gone before, and there's the...
It's like the best of humanity, like exploring and like achieving this like difficult, it's not political. It's
right.
not like, that's why I think we talked about the eclipse being so popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's partially why. It's
and
exciting.
You think, well, if we could do that, what else could we do?
Yeah.
It's like kind of an inspiring thing. And we were also talking about some other cultural things about how there's still doubters out there if we went to the moon or not.
Sore subject.
And I think your favorite reaction is Buzz, right? You still like the Buzz
my
Aldrin
absolute
reaction.
Buzz Aldrin is a national treasure.
Yes.
We need to like preserve and protect him at all costs.
Yes, and so he was harassed.
Yes.
I mean, basically he's harassed nonstop by a few people.
And he's in his 80s now.
Yeah, and one person in particular that would just, he would hound him. He said, swear on this Bible that you went to the moon.
Right.
And like, he's like, yeah, all right, I'll do it. And he did it. And then he's like, okay, do it again. Swear on this Bible that you went to the moon. And he's like, no, I don't need to answer you.
Right.
He got harassed. And so what happened?
He's like following him.
He followed him outside and
Buzz hit him.
Buzz punched him. That's right.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, don't mess with astronauts. That's
and their
the main
life's
thing.
Work, like this incredible achievement. I'm just like, I think it's hysterical.
Yeah, yeah. I think that one's amazing. And then
I also have to say, really, I'm sorry. This is like, they did a photo shoot of like all the living astronauts. Like I think it's like 8 that went to the moon, I want to say. And they're all in like, it was for like Vanity Fair or something really fancy.
Oh.
I meant to show you this the other day. It was like, they're in like tuxedos and suits.
Ooh.
And they were giving a talk and there was a photo shoot. Buzz Aldrin is wearing like a silver suit that has like moons and planets. And it's all over. I'll post a picture on our social media. And then his socks are the American flag.
Well, yeah, it is, of course.
The greatest picture. The man is an icon.
Yeah.
I'm going to post it on our social media. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and then the other fellow that doesn't quite get as much credit as he deserves is Michael Collins,
the third
astronaut on the Apollo 11 mission. I mean, he went through all the same training, went through all the same thing. He launches with them. They go up into space. They go to the moon. And then Buzz and Neil.
But he was in the bathroom and ended up going in third.
He had to stay behind. Somebody had to, like, circle the moon and wait for them to come back up. And
why didn't he just, like, park?
You can't park. You got
Michael.
That takes energy. That's why this new mission, they want to send up an orbiting space station around the moon. So then you don't have just one guy circling the moon while the other two are bouncing around the moon. You got a whole bunch of people up there and they're hanging out. And
did he get to do it at all?
He'd never landed on the moon. No. So that was his. And that's the thing with all the Apollo missions. It was always two people landed, one circled. So
yeah.
So the 12 people walked on the moon, and I think a total 21 went to the moon. So 9 went and circled the moon, but never landed.
A bummer.
I know, it is a bummer.
Did you know that 600 million people watched the moon landing?
Wow, for 1969.
Isn't that insane? Are there 600? I mean, that's like... But when you think about, there wasn't a whole lot to just. I mean, this is like the story, right?
Right.
Don't you think it probably was?
Yes.
What else is going on? Whatever. What's the 60s were crazy, but still, I mean, 600 million people watch this thing.
Yeah, the buildup.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was the moment, and it's been great looking back on it 50 years, and
for sure.
We'll think what's going to be 50 years from now. Anna on the moon.
Anna Heeman on
Anna
the moon.
In space.
I'm going to do so good. Can I record the podcast from up there?
Sure.
Are you going to get jelly when I get all the attention?
Sure. You can even do it from the desk.
From the roll-top desk. Sitting in my astronaut's outfit. You're the one with the space suit.
That's true. I do
with,
have
like,
a flight
the
suit.
Flight suit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Space.
You're much more ready than me.
I don't think that's space space legal.
Space legal.
As we wrap up our celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing on July 20th, 1969, it seems only appropriate that we spend a few minutes with Mark Armstrong, son of Neil Armstrong. He's a successful engineer, responsible in part for the creation of Web TV networks, as well as an entrepreneur, an actor, and singer. And, full disclosure, he served on the board of the Cincinnati Observatory, where Anna and I work. Mark, we know it's been a busy summer for you, so thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, we have the big anniversary, and so I got to ask, what do you remember personally from that big day of July 20th, 1969?
Well, we were at our house, and I was at the house with my family, and we had a lot of friends and neighbors and relatives all joining us at the house. And people were coming and going most of the day. They might come over and bring some food over and set it on the dining room table. And, you know, other people would come by and grab something, or it was just a lot of activity. It was pretty typical for during a flight for you to sort of hold on an open house. And we, of course, we had the squawk box, so people could stop by and they could listen to the squawk box and kind of know exactly what was happening on the mission, where ordinarily you would not be able to get that information because there wasn't, you know, continual news coverage of the mission. So that's what it was like. And it was, you know, there was a lot of excitement and anticipation in the house. And I think a lot of people were coming and going, just checking on my mother to make sure that she was, keeping it all together, if you know what I mean.
So as a kid, it was kind of like a normal day, or was it an abnormal day? Because how old were you at that time?
I was 6. It was definitely an abnormal day just because there were so many people coming out in and out of the house, and the there were news crews out on the street just beyond our sidewalk. So it was definitely not a normal day, but an exciting one nevertheless.
So as you said, you were 6, so you're pretty young. Did you realize, or did you have any feeling of the implication of kind of what was happening at the time, you know, at that age and in that atmosphere, or kind of just not really
aware? Well, Anna, I knew what was happening, but I didn't understand the risk. I didn't understand how dangerous it was. That had just been, I'd been sheltered from that information. And I also didn't understand the historical context, because this was the world that I grew up in. And so it didn't seem extraordinary to me at the time. It wasn't until much later that I really understood how dangerous the mission was, how what all the things that could have gone wrong, and also how it affected the rest of the world.
Well, and we got to interview James Hansen, the author of the book First Man, about your dad, and then also was made into a movie. How was that transition? I think, and you guys kind of participated a little bit in that, right?
We did. We were consultants. So yeah, I was involved in First Man along with my brother and my mother as people that would review the script and provide feedback. Accuracy on First Man was our most important criteria. Really, we cared very much about the story not being sensationalized and being told the way it should be told. And so that's why my brother and my mother and I all got involved to review the script and provide that kind of feedback. Once we learned that that Damien Chazelle and Josh Singer, the screenwriter, and Ryan and Claire, of course, cared as much about accuracy as we did, we felt a little better we felt a lot better, actually, about the movie. And we were very happy to provide them with as much information as we could in the hopes of making the best story possible and telling the most accurate story possible. So, I think that went very well. There are a few things I disagree with in the film, but I'm told for a Hollywood film, if you only disagree with a few things, that's a pretty good record.
And I would say probably your father's much more handsome than the actor that they got to play. Wouldn't you say that's what they got wrong, right?
Oh, man. Actually, I found Ryan to be really a lovely guy, very modest in his own right, and I enjoyed meeting him and getting to know him. Very much.
Anna perked up.
I really wanted to ask what he was like, but I thought this is not that kind of interview. I shouldn't be asking what Ryan Gosling is like.
Mark's on a first name basis.
Mark's
he
like,
just
oh, Ryan's
Ryan.
Great.
Oh, just Ryan's
Ryan's
great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell us a little bit? I thought one of the coolest things is that you have a cameo in the movie, as well as your brother, and I think your son has a cameo. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about that?
So the character I play in the movie is a guy named Paul Haney. Paul was called the voice of Mission Control for missions that were sort of prior to Apollo 11, going back into the Gemini days. And Paul was sort of the Marty Brenneman of Mission Control, right? So he was there and he was listening to what was happening. And he was putting it into layman's terms so that listeners on the squawk box could know what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
If you just listen to the flight director, for example, there's so much jargon and there's so many references that are not familiar. You really need someone that is helping to kind of translate that into terms that are easy to understand. And that was Paul's job. Paul, the character Paul, comes into play in the film during the Gemini 8 mission, and I have actually one line in the film, but the line comes through the squawk box, so it's being listened to in the Armstrong home. So that was my part. And then,
ooh, that's surreal.
It's kind of surreal.
It's like you're talking to yourself,
right? In the past.
Exactly. Exactly. And in fact, my character. The young man that plays me as a 6-year-old steals the squawk box and then gets in trouble for it. So
oh, yeah, that's right.
It's all sort of cosmically interconnected there. But my son also is in and my brother both are in that Gemini 8 mission control sequence. And my son is easy to pick out because he's the one that plays the guitar when everything seems to be going really well. which is a little piece of research that Damien did that said that there were a number of people in Mission Control that had musical instruments with them. And when things were slow or things were particularly good, they would, you know, kind of get them out and fiddle with them.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice. Like a pre-iTunes.
Yeah.
Live
right.
music.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, live music. Well, I mean, I know the Apollo 11, you know, mission just really inspired a lot of folks and you know, a whole country. And how did it influence your career choices and, you know, growing up in that environment?
Well, I definitely was always sort of wired towards science and math. And I don't really know if that would have been the case otherwise, or if I was influenced at an early age in terms of things that were, you know, technological in nature. I suspect that was the case, that I really kind of picked up on as a kid, you know, kind of absorbing the things that you don't even know that you're absorbing, but kind of picking up on all these technological things and found myself very interested in technology and science and math and engineering types of things as I grew up. So, and I ended up actually majoring in physics, but I spent a career in software engineering in Silicon Valley. So, which was at the time, you know, a really new, the personal computer had just come out in the early 80s, and that's when I was in college. So, I gravitated towards that because it was the latest, coolest thing.
So you've obviously accomplished a lot in your career and you've had several successes in different things, but how do you see your role in your father's kind of legacy, especially as we look at the 50th anniversary of the moon landing?
Anna, I suppose I see myself both as a curator and as an ambassador of my dad's legacy. And that's been a privilege and an honor to carry forward.
That's lovely.
Well, we're recording this before the anniversary. So can you tell us, what are your plans for the actual day of July 20th, 2019?
Well, Dean, my daughter and I have recorded a song called Flight of Fancy. It's a song about my father's love of flight, based on a day when I was about 6 years old and he took me up in a glider.
Oh, wow.
And that song will be the end credit song of the upcoming film Armstrong, which is a documentary about my dad. And we're going to perform that song on July 16th at Carnegie Hall.
Oh, wow.
And then on the 20th, we're going to perform it again at the Kennedy Center with the National Symphony Orchestra. So looking forward to that.
Whoa.
That's amazing.
It's not bad playing Carnegie Hall. And that's great. And with your family all together, that's really awesome. Well, I know you've got your jam-packed schedule this month. So really, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us. It's been really, really great.
Well, I appreciate your show very much. And I'm very happy to talk with you today and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We spoke with Mark Armstrong prior to the 50th anniversary of his dad's historic moonwalk back in 1969.
All right. So we're going to do a little something different. Are you ready, Dean?
I'm ready.
You know what it is a little bit.
I do know what it is.
That's right. So we're going to do some rapid fire fact or fiction.
Okay.
Rapid fire fact or fiction.
Okay.
And the topic, it's Saturn is up.
Saturn is up.
Saturn is gorgeous.
Yep.
It's got accessories. I love it. And we're going to do some rapid fire Saturn questions.
Awesome.
So I'm going to ask you questions.
Ready.
You got to say yes or no.
Okay.
And actually, one or two of them. Oh, yeah. One of them is like a short answer question.
All right. I can do short answer.
Multiple I hope you
choice,
read your own book.
Any, oh, they come from the book. Facts
Did
from
Space. Did
you
guys know Dean wrote a book? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, this is all from Facts from Space, available where you buy books.
Where you buy. anywhere you want to purchase a book. And Dean will sign it. He loves doing that.
If I don't know the answer to these, then I'm in trouble.
I'm secretly hoping I can stump you. Do not edit this out, Josh, if he gets one wrong.
Okay. I'm ready.
I heard him say okay. All right. Ready?
Yes.
This is a true or false.
True or false. Okay.
A day on Saturn is 10 and a half hours long.
That sounds pretty accurate. I'd say true.
Okay. Wait, do you want me to tell you if you're right right now, or do you want me to wait till after?
No,
okay, that was right.
Okay.
Ding, I need a bell. Ding.
All right. 10 and a half hours. That's a fast day.
10 and a half is a really fast day. I would get nothing done.
Mm-hmm.
Saturn is the fourth planet from the sun. True or false?
False. It's the,
what is it then?
Sixth planet from the sun.
How do you remember that?
My very educated mother just served us nachos.
M-V-E-M-J. Okay, fine.
Checks out. Okay.
Yeah, fine. Saturn has 62 moons.
That is, at last count, true. 62 moons. I haven't seen it today, what the latest count is, but they
today?
Find them, they
is
find
it
them,
like,
they find them a lot. But
there's like a ticker. Like, oh, at a moon.
Now the Cassini is R.I.P. fallen into the planet.
R.I.P.
We'll probably be stuck at 62 for a while.
Man.
Yep.
Saturn takes 25 years to orbit the sun.
False. It takes 29 and change, 29 and a half, almost 30 years to orbit the sun.
Oh, and change. what is meant by the term naked Saturn?
Ah, naked Saturn. So Saturn, you normally, when you look at it through the telescope, is this the short answer one?
This is the short answer, okay. Obviously.
So I just go in. I don't.
You're like, anyway.
I'll give short answer all.
I did notice you wanted to like embellish on, I was like, just. Do we get it? Yeah, you got it right.
Saturn, yes. When you see it through the telescope, of course, mm-hmm. We always see those beautiful rings.
Gorgeous.
And so they tilt as it goes around the sun every 29 and a half years.
Uh-huh.
They tilt changes with respect to the Earth. So sometimes we see the rings like really opened up where you can see a lot of rings. And other years, they go edge on. So you see the skinniest part of the rings.
They're like flat.
Exactly. Okay. So the rings are like 200,000 miles wide.
Beautiful.
But in some places only like a dozen feet thick.
Like, oh my gosh.
That's it. And so
that's tiny.
So when they're pointed edge on to us, every 15 years we get an edge on Saturn, and mm-hmm. You look at Saturn in the telescope, it has no rings because the rings are basically invisible.
They're just like too skinny.
Exactly. So we were trying to figure out what to do the last time this happened because people mm-hmm. would come to the observatory and look at Saturn. There's no rings.
They'd be like, this isn't Saturn.
What's going on? This isn't Saturn. What are you guys
doing?
The moon
landing is also fake.
So we tried to come up with an event called Naked Saturn so you could see Saturn without the rings.
Did this backfire?
It totally backfired. No, it did not fly. They're like, ugh, nobody wants to see naked Saturn.
Nobody's up for it. Poor Saturn.
We tried to make it, jazz it up, but...
Jazz it up, naked Saturn.
No dice.
Last question. Who famously wrote that Saturn has ears?
Oh, yeah.
You better get this one
right. I better get this. This is my main man.
It's your boo.
Galileo.
Galileo. I think it's adorable.
Yeah, because he's looking through his homemade little telescope, and he's looking at Saturn. Nobody's ever seen it like him before. He's like, what are those things sticking out of
they're
it? It's
ears.
Like, they're, so he's like, Saturn has ears that stick out. Not
so whimsical.
Rings, I know.
He did his best. It was like the 1600s, wasn't it?
That's not bad for 1600s technology.
Not bad at all, Galileo. Great. And not bad, Dean. Fine, you did good.
Thank you.
You
thank
wrote you. This book. I mean, well, you're from your book.
I know, the question.
I wanted to test if you got a ghostwriter.
See, nope.
I could just like,
I write my own
expose.
Stuff. That's right. I didn't know these questions ahead of time, but I did read the book.
He was definitely like, you know, there's some stuff. No, all right, good job. Fine.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. A huge thanks to Mark Armstrong for joining us today.
And thank you for listening. You know, we're all ears here. We'd love to get your ideas for guests or topics or any questions you or your kids may have about space, astronomy, and science. You can drop us a note on Facebook or Twitter or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
And parents, while the kiddos are on summer break, we hope you'll introduce them to Looking Up. For those car trips or rainy days, we think they'll have fun listening and maybe they'll learn something too.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts, and please give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.